The following is a sermon by Pastor Todd Dykstra, teaching pastor of Maranatha Bible Church of Comstock Park, Michigan. For more information, go to mbcmi.org.
Take your Bibles, please, and open up to the book of Ecclesiastes. We are back in our study of Ecclesiastes, chapter 5. We have been working our way through this book. We've come to chapter 5 today. We come again to another passage on the issue of money and materialism. We visited this theme back in chapter 2. This won't be the last time that we visit this theme as we continue working our way through Solomon's diary of his failed experiment to find satisfaction in this world. Whether we want to admit it or not, most of us want more money, right? If we take a survey this morning, each one of us would acknowledge that there are things that we have on our wish list. The list of things that we would want to purchase if we could, the list of items that we would like to gather for ourselves. Maybe it's a nicer house or a better car or newer clothes, whatever it is. All of us spend some time thinking about what we could do if we had more money, what we could buy. And in those quiet times, in those moments when we're not doing a lot, our minds oftentimes, if we're honest, drift towards those things that we would like to purchase if we just had more money. Human nature is just that. It wants more. We want more. We want more money. We want more stuff. We want more things. And if we could just get some more money, we could accomplish those things. It was J.D. Rockefeller who famously, when asked how much money was enough, said, "Just a little bit more." One of the richest men who's ever lived on the face of this planet thought if he could just get a little bit more, that would be enough. That's the approach that most of us take. Most of us would like just a little bit more money. Greed is a driving force that drives most of us and most people in this country to make more money. Most American families spend more money than they make. You look on the internet, you look at some statistics, you realize that most American families spend more money than they actually make. This is a problem. 50% of all divorces are due to financial pressures in the home. And so we realize that this greed is permeating the very institution that makes up the fabric of our society, the families. It is permeating the families and the desire for more stuff. I don't know about you, but every week it seems like I get 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 credit card notices in the mailbox. Sign up for this card. Get this card. Get this cash back if you sign up for this card. There are over 200 million credit cards used every day in this country. The average couple has 6 credit cards. You'll be asked to leave today and check them at the door as you head out. Just kidding. There, in 2010, rather, $2 trillion was charged on credit cards, and over $800 billion is owed on credit cards. Every day, this is a shocking statistic, every day credit card companies make a total of $373 million. Off of interest. This is a commentary on our society. The lie of the American dream is that we can have whatever we want, no matter how much it costs. You know, one of the things we talk about in our premarital counseling sessions with young couples is when we work through finances, we talk about how when their parents grew up and as they were married and they progressed along a line that 30 years later brought them to a certain standard of living that they're able to enjoy today. And one of the things we talk about in premarital is you can't expect to enter marriage and have that same level of standard of living in your first year of marriage. And yet that's what happens. So many young couples enter marriage expecting to have that same level of living as mom and dad had. We live in a society that wants to get rich. We live in a society that wants money, and if we're not careful, we fall prey to that. There are a number of opportunities available today. You can get rich in 5 steps to 6 figures. You can go online and look at how many ways you can get rich, how to make 7 figures per year working from home. I make 7 figures, if you count the cents, right? The love of money is a disease that has afflicted us nationally and individually. It has been called affluenza. Someone has put together a couple terms, affluence and influenza, and has come up with this term called affluenza to describe the epidemic that has taken place in our society, a disease which is the disease of wanting more money, this modern-day plague of materialism called affluenza. It's a problem. And it's no wonder that when we come to the Word of God, there are a number of passages that deal with this issue. From Old Testament to New Testament, Jesus himself gave 38 parables, and of those 38 parables, 16, almost half of them, deal with the issue of money and possessions. 15% of everything Jesus said is about money. Jesus spoke more about money and possessions than heaven and hell combined. In the Gospels, one out of every 10 verses deals with money and its possessions. There are 288 verses in the four Gospels that refer to money alone. This is a huge issue. And it's an issue that permeates the Old Testament and the New Testament. And we have to recognize when we fall prey to this desire. And it's pretty easy to recognize that in those who gamble, those who buy lottery tickets, those who want more stuff, those who talk about the stuff that they bought and the stuff that they buy to store their stuff in and the stuff that they buy to clean the stuff that they store the stuff that they bought in. It's easy to recognize it in those people, and yet, if we're honest, most of us struggle with this. Every single one of us here this morning has recently thought of something we'd like if we could just get more money. The question is, how much is enough? How much is enough? This is the question that Solomon has been after in the book of Ecclesiastes. How much is enough? And you remember way back in chapter 2 when we took our time going through the experiments that Solomon engaged in. He said in chapter 2 verse 8 that I have collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. And yet in the end he comes to the end and says it's all vanity. It's all striving after the wind. I've hoarded, I've collected, I've stored up riches and wealth and treasure and gold and silver. And in the end, there's no profit. It's empty. If anyone could have found satisfaction in money, it was Solomon, the richest man who's ever lived on the face of this planet. He had so much money, he didn't know what to do with it all. In 1 year alone, in 1 Kings, it says that he took in 25 tons of gold in 1 year. Which is nearly $1 billion in today's terms. He had such an overabundance of gold that silver was deemed worthless in that day. There were rocks of silver just laying on the ground. It was worth nothing because he had made gold so prevalent in his kingdom. If anyone knew about money, Solomon did. But he has come to the point where he wonders, how much is enough? When am I content? How much is enough to make me happy? It is that question that he deals with here again in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 8 to 20. Let me read the passage. I invite you to follow along, starting in Ecclesiastes 5, verse 8. He says, if you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight, for one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them. After all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage in the land. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. There's a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun, riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. When those riches were lost through a bad investment and he fathered a son, then there was nothing to support him. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so he will return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. And this also is a grievous evil. Exactly as a man is born, thus he will die. So what is the advantage to him who toils for the wind? Throughout his life, he also eats in darkness with great vexation, sickness, and anger. Here's what I've seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and to enjoy oneself and all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. For he will not often consider the years of his life, because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. Over and over and over again in these 13 verses, the word riches, money, wealth, poor, increase occurs. And Solomon's aim here is to demonstrate the danger of pursuing wealth and trying to find our satisfaction in this wealth. He warns us against accumulating stuff and wealth and riches and encourage us to enjoy God, to thank God for what he's given us, to be content with what we have. At this point, some of you are ready to check out, because you're here and you're saying, hey, Todd, I can't even pay my bills. I can't even pay my mortgage. I can't even afford living sometimes. And you're telling me I'm rich? According to the Bible, we all are. We've got more than enough food, more than enough clothes, and a roof over our head. We're all rich. And so for all of us here this morning, these are some instructions that are going to go right to our heart and cause us to examine our heart on whether or not we're content with what God has given us. I want to give you this morning seven dangers of loving money. Seven dangers of loving money. And what Solomon's going to do here is essentially he's going to detail for us warnings against loving riches. He's going to list one thing after the other that should serve as a warning against our own heart of engaging in and loving riches and money. And then he's going to tell us how to respond in a way that will honor the Lord. Let's look at these first. Number one, it leads to corruption. Here's the first danger of loving money. It leads to corruption. And it's in verse 8. Look what he says. He says, if you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight. For one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them. What's this all about? He's talking about officials here and oppression of the poor. This is about governmental oppression of those in positions of leadership against the poor people. This is a passage about the frustrations of an oppressive bureaucracy where you've got powerful people in powerful places with lots of money, and the end result is oppression and injustice towards people who are not as wealthy. And Solomon says, when you see this, don't be shocked. Don't be shocked. When you see people in positions of power with lots of money and they're taking advantage of the poor people, don't be shocked by that. Why? Because it's usually the rich who oppress the poor. It's usually the rich who get into positions of power and influence and leadership. Think about it. We're watching it today play it out on national television. The men are vying for the Republican nomination for president. And they're spending millions, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars to get this nomination. And you don't have poor people doing that. Poor people don't try and get nominated for president because it takes lots of money. It takes lots of cash. And so Solomon's point here is the rich rule. They have an advantage over the poor to attain wealth. And when they get that wealth, then they oppress people and cause injustice to those under them. That seems to be his point here in verse 8. He says one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them. Instead of getting in positions of power, they end up looking to those underneath them as opportunities to gain more money and squeeze money out of the officials underneath them. This is corrupt. Leads to extortion, injustice at all levels of government. And Solomon says, hey, don't be surprised. When you see this taking place, this is just normally how it works. You put ungodly people into an ungodly system where there's money at stake, and they're going to do all they can to get more money. He says this corruption goes all the way to the top. Look at verse 9. After all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage to the land. Even the king himself takes advantage of this politically corrupt system. And the king's in it for money as well. It's not always true, but oftentimes it is. So his point here is that when you love money, it leads to corruption. And we can see that played out in our government. We can see political officials being charged over embezzlement issues and improper use of campaign funds. That stuff's always going on. We heard recently of a former U.S. House Majority Leader who was found guilty on charges of money laundering and trying to funnel corporate money into the Texas candidates. This is what happens when you put men in positions of power with lots of money. They seek to get more money, and it leads to corruption. It's one of the problems of loving money. It corrupts your heart. Notice this Friday night, we went out for dinner. Had a great dinner out, and the waitress brings the bill, and she forgot to charge for drinks. Diet Pepsis, in case you were wondering, okay? They're not on the bill. The meals are there, the tax is there, the gratuity there. There's no charge for the drinks. And so at that moment, there's a battle in my heart. Do you say something? Because if you don't say something, you get off a little cheaper that night, a little less spending for the date night, you know? And so you're thinking, hey, you could get away with it. The corruption begins to seep into your heart. What do you do? Well, we said something, and we paid the extra, and we left, and it turned out to be okay. But that's what money does. Money corrupts your heart. Money begins to look for ways to get more money and steal and lie and cheat. It leads to corruption. Number two, it leads to dissatisfaction. It leads to dissatisfaction. Here's the second problem of loving money. The second danger of loving money is it leads to dissatisfaction. It will not satisfy you. Look at verse 10. He says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. So verses 8 and 9 deal with wealth and prosperity and riches at a national and political level. And here in verse 10, he deals with it on an individual and a private scale. Public officials are not the only ones who succumb to the love of money. Private individuals do as well. And there's a temptation for anyone, Solomon says, to love money. And when you tempt that, when you try that, he says, listen, it will not satisfy you. Guaranteed. It will lead to disappointment. It will lead to frustration. It will lead to unhappiness. But it will not satisfy you. That's what he says, verse 10. If you love money, you will not be satisfied with money. Keep in mind who's saying this. The richest man who's ever lived. And he says, hey, take it from me. I've had everything and it doesn't satisfy. Money is not the secret to happiness. It's addictive. It's unsatisfying. I want you to notice what he doesn't say here. He doesn't say he who has money will not be satisfied with it. He doesn't say that. The issue is not money itself. There's nothing moral about money. Right? Money itself does not corrupt you. Money itself is not a bad thing. Money is not inherently wrong. It's not evil. I know many godly people who have lots of money and they're content and they're godly and they love the Lord. The issue is not money. Look what he says. He says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance. The issue is a heart issue. The issue is loving money. It's loving abundance. It's loving prosperity. It's loving what money can do to you, what money can buy, what money can make you feel like. That's the problem with money. It's not money itself. It's the love of money. The love of money creates an insatiable desire for more money. It has been said, money makes a lousy lover. The more you love it, the less it satisfies. The more you focus on it, the less it delivers. That's true. It makes a lousy lover. And it will not satisfy. The more you love it, the less it satisfies. The more you put into it, the less in return you get. And so he says, listen, it's not going to satisfy you. You're putting all your hopes in this. You're putting all your dreams in this. You're throwing yourself into making more money. And he says, listen, it's not going to give you what you're looking for. That's why he says at the end of verse 10, this too is vanity. It's empty. It's steam off your cup of tea in the morning. It's here and then it's gone. It's the breath that comes out of your mouth on a cold winter morning. It's here and then it's gone. That's what your money's like. It's here for a moment and then it's gone. He says you'll never be satisfied. Paul says this. This is the theme all the way through the scriptures. Paul affirms this as well in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. He says, for the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. Paul says the same thing Solomon says. He says, listen, if you love money, you are going to succumb to all kinds of problems and issues and evils of your heart, and it literally will pierce you with many griefs. We said previously that word pierce refers to meat on a spit, right? When you cook meat, you drive a stake through that piece of meat and you roast it over a fire. He says, when you love money and you let your heart go to loving money, you pierce yourself and put yourself on a spit and you're roasted. Beautiful picture, isn't it? That's why Jesus said, Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. You can't have both. I love what one commentator says. He says, if anything is worse than the addiction money brings, it is the emptiness it leaves. Is your soul empty this morning? Is it empty? Is it because there's been a pursuit of money and riches and wealth? I was watching an interview this week with perhaps the top quarterback in the NFL. Very successful, very well known, well gifted at playing the game. He was being interviewed. This is what he said. He says, I'm making more money now than I ever thought you could make playing football. I have 3 Super Bowl rings, yet I still think that there's something out there greater for me. Maybe a lot of people out there would say, well, this is the way it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life. Me, I think there's got to be more than this. Here's perhaps one of the most famous football players in the world. Very successful, earning millions of dollars a year, with 3 Super Bowls under his belt. He says, is this all there is? The interviewer then asked him, after his statement of there's got to be more than this, and the interviewer says, what's the answer? And he says, I wish I knew. I just wish I knew. Friends, that's Ecclesiastes. That's Ecclesiastes. It doesn't satisfy. It brings an emptiness to your soul. So the question for us is, are we looking for satisfaction in money? Is our soul longing for the things we can buy and get and store up for ourselves? Are you believing that if you could just get a little bit more, if you could just store a little more away, if you could just get that raise, that will solve all your problems? Solomon says, listen, I'm not going to satisfy you. How do you know if you love money? Can I give you one simple test? Very simple. How much do you give away? How much do you give away? People who love money don't give money away. People who are not enslaved to money, they give it freely. They give to the church. They give to others. They share. How about you? What do you do? How much do you give away? There have been so many times in our life where God has been so good to us. When God has used others to meet our needs. I remember in seminary, so many times we'd open our seminary mailbox, and inside there is a cash gift card. I'll tell you, that'll encourage your heart. I remember in adoptions, you know, it's not cheap to adopt 5 kids. And through all those adoptions, you know what? God was so faithful. He used so many people to enable us to adopt kids and bring them into our family. You know what? That's a spirit of generosity and giving. And you know what that makes us want to do? It makes us want to give. It makes us just want to turn around and give that same level of joy and encouragement to others. Is that for you as well? Do you give? Dangers of loving money leads to corruption, leads to dissatisfaction. Number 3, there's a third danger of loving money. It leads to takers. This is really interesting. It leads to takers. The more money you have, the more people there are who want your money. Verse 11, when good things increase, which is his way of saying when you get rich, when you have a lot, when you're able to accumulate wealth, when good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? Solomon says, hey, when your money increases, so do the number of people who want your money. The more loot you get, the more looters show up, right? That's what he's saying. When you get more, when your bank account grows, suddenly there's all kinds of people that you need to hire and all kinds of people that want a portion of what you've got. Proverbs 19, remember Solomon wrote most of the Proverbs as well. Listen to what he says here in Proverbs 19, verses 4 through 7. He says, wealth adds many friends, but a poor man is separated from his friend. Many will seek the favor of a generous man, and every man is a friend to him who gives gifts. All the brothers of a poor man hate him. How much more do his friends abandon him? He pursues them with his words, but they are gone. He says, listen, if you're poor, no one likes you. That's obviously an overstatement, but that's what he's kind of saying. If you don't have much money, there's no one that really cares about you. But if you've got a lot of money, so, you have lots of friends. Lots of people want to be your friend. Proverbs 14, verse 20, the poor is hated even by his neighbor, but those who love the rich are many. Money brings out human leeches. It brings out those who want to put their hands in your pockets and take what is yours. That's why he says at the end of verse 11, look what he says. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? He says, what's the point? So I make more money, and yet I got to hire more people to manage my money, and there are more people who want my money. And so what's the advantage to this? What's the purpose of this? He says, there's no advantage. All I can do is watch people take my money. This is the danger of wealth. It's the danger of loving money, is you've got more people who want the money that you have. Listen, it's expensive to be rich. You understand that? It costs a lot of money to be rich. You need to hire lawyers to watch over your accounts. You need to hire money managers and investment advisors to make sure no one's taking your money and investing it wisely. That costs money. You got to hire financial planners, those who are thinking ahead for you and putting your money into proper places. You've got to hire bankers and tax consultants and accountants and bodyguards and household employees. It's costly to be rich. You need a maid to clean your house. You need a gardener to keep the yard. You need a chauffeur to drive your car. You need a nanny to watch your kids. And you know what? All those people want to be paid. That's his point. And you add to that a government that wants their share. Right? They're going to take a portion of your riches. And then you've got all kinds of friends and family who show up out of nowhere saying, hey, could you help me out with this? His point is the rich person has to spend vast amounts of time and money protecting their own money from loss. Just look at the people who've won the lottery and look at their lives after the lottery. It's miserable, right? It's horrible. I was reading this week of a man who won $20 million a number of years ago. He was generous. He began sharing with friends and family some of his money, including cars and houses and trips to nice places. That wasn't enough for some people that were close to him. And so on July 26, 2005, a close relative and her boyfriend kidnapped this man, this instant millionaire, shot him in the back of the head and killed him instantly. This is what happens when you've got money. You've got people who want it. And Solomon's whole point here is you can't enjoy it. You can't enjoy it then. You've got to protect it. You've got to hire people to make sure no one takes it. And you spend your whole life worrying about whether or not your money's actually safe. And that costs you lots of money. More is not always better. And in this case, it's not. So, very simple application. Look to people who can give. Who you can give to, not get from. Look to the people whom you can give to, not get from. It's a pretty sad list so far, isn't it? Leads to corruption, leads to dissatisfaction, leads to takers. It gets worse. Watch. Verse 12. It leads to anxiety. Here's the fourth danger that Solomon says will happen if you love money. It leads to anxiety. Verse 12, it says, the sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. This is a wonderful comparison between the poor person or the person of modest means who's very content with where they're at versus the rich person. And he says the sleep of the working man is pleasant whether he eats little or much. This is so good. He says when you're not too concerned about money, when you're not in it for the money, when you're not trying to get more for yourself, you're going to sleep pretty good at night. Some days you'll go to bed more full than others. Some days you have a lot of food. Some days you have a little food. But either way, you go to bed grateful, thankful, content, grateful for what God's given you, and you sleep like a baby because you're thankful. Not the rich man. Look at verse 12. It says, the stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. Huh. This guy's so full. He has eaten so much. He has gorged himself on so much food, he can't even sleep at night. Added to that is the fact that he's worried, anxious, fretful, concerned about who's going to get his money. And because of that, he's up all night. Can't sleep. He's got insomnia. You ever had that? It's horrible. You just lay there, you watch the minutes ticking by on your clock, and you're thinking, man, I wish I could fall asleep. That's the rich man. He's just laying there trying to get some sleep, and he can't sleep because his stomach is so full and because he's so concerned about his money. Someone has said insomnia is much more likely to occur in the fancy houses on the hilltops than in the small cottages in the valley. That's good, isn't it? He says it's better to have sleep in a small cottage in the valley than to lay awake in the fancy house on the hill. Solomon says this is a danger. Rich people worry about their riches. They're up all night. They're filled with food, but their souls are empty. They worry about whether investments are safe. They're anxious about the markets. They worry about whether there will be a recession. They wonder if they'll lose everything they've worked for. All that is enough to keep them awake at night. And Solomon says, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. You want to sleep good? Be content. Be thankful. Be grateful for what God has given you and enjoy your gracious gifts from the Lord and sleep good at night. Charles Bridges says, sleepless nights are connected with anxious days. You having trouble sleeping? Laying awake at night, fretting, concerned, thinking about your money. Says that's one of the problems of wealth. Loving money, it's one of the dangers. Very simple implications for us. Be content. Be thankful for what you have. Whatever you have. More, less, lots, little, it doesn't matter. Be thankful. Be grateful. Be content. Be thankful for what God has given you. Be a faithful worker. Put in an honest day's work and go home and sleep good. I sleep so good at night. I don't know if it's because I'm content. I want to think it is, but I put my head on the pillow and I am gone. It just feels so good to sleep at night, doesn't it? He says, be content. Be thankful. Number five, there's a fifth danger of loving money. It's that it leads to harm. It leads to corruption and dissatisfaction and takers and anxiety. It also leads to harm. Look at verse 13. He says, there's a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun, riches being hoarded by their owner. Now mark this last phrase, to his hurt. Here's the danger. If you engage in love of money, there is something evil that's going to happen to you. And the evil is, it's going to hurt you. You're going to be in it so much for the money that you are hoarding for yourself. And the result is, it will hurt you. It has been said, he who has no money is poor, but he who has nothing but money is even poorer. It's true. You love money, you're going to hurt yourself. Remember Ananias and Sapphira? Book of Acts, chapter 5. They sell a piece of land. They go to the apostles. They say, hey, this is what we sold our land for. Here, you can have it. And they lied. They lied to God. They lied to the Holy Spirit. And so they call, the apostles call them out on it and say, listen, this is what you said you sold it for, but we know you didn't. You actually paid, you got more for it, didn't you? And they said, yeah, we lied. And God strikes them dead right there on the spot. To their hurt. Remember Judas? 30 pieces of silver, he sold out the Son of God. 30 pieces. And when he realized what he did, he went out and hanged himself. And it says his body burst open and his bowels gushed forth as he crashed to the rocks underneath him. To his hurt. Turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 12. Hold your finger here in Ecclesiastes 5. Just go quickly over to Luke chapter 12. You know this parable. Parable of the rich man. Verse 13. Luke 12, 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me. But he said to him, man who appointed me a judge or an arbiter over you. And he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of evil and greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. Here's someone who's wanting more money. They're wanting their portion of their inheritance. And so Jesus tells them a parable, verse 16. Told him a parable saying, the land of a certain rich man was very productive. He began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? He said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Here's a guy who's pretty content. He's kicked up his heels. He's made a lot of money for himself. He's got a good investment. He's got his storehouses full. He can kick back and enjoy the good life. Verse 20. But God just said to him, you fool. This very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So this is the man who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. It cost him his life to his hurt. Are you laying up treasure for yourself, or are you rich toward God? Go back to Ecclesiastes 5. Solomon says, listen, you love money, you store it for yourselves, you're going to hurt yourself in the end. In verse 14, look at Ecclesiastes 5:14. When those riches were lost through a bad investment and he had fathered a son, then there was nothing to support him. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, but it's all going to be lost. He says you're going to lose it through a bad investment, and even though you have son, you have children, you have dependents, there's going to be nothing left to support them. It's fleeting. Calamity strikes, there's a stock market crash, you fall ill, and suddenly something happens that takes most of your money and you're left with nothing. It all comes crashing down. He says, don't put your hope in riches. Don't put your hope in riches. You be rich towards God. You give yourself to God and His kingdom. Matthew 6:33, you seek first His kingdom and all these things will be added unto you. Don't hope in riches. Number six, there's a sixth danger here that comes with loving money. It leads to grief. It leads to grief. Verse 15, as he had come naked from his mother's womb, speaking of the rich man here again, so will he return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. This also is a grievous evil, exactly as a man is born, thus he will die. So what is the advantage to him who toils for the wind? Here's another danger. The other danger is it's left all at your death. It's just left. He says, this is evil. You spend your life making money. You put it in the bank. You make good investments. You store it up for self. And then at the end, you lose it all. You die and you take none of it with you. He says in verse 15, he will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. Done a number of funerals, and there's nothing in their hands. You can't take it with you. It's just here, and then it's gone. It's transient. You store some up, and then all of a sudden you die. It's gone. It's done. And so he says in verse 16, so what is the advantage to him who toils for the wind? There's no advantage. You spend your life pursuing satisfaction and money. You're pursuing something which locked in time, and you have invested in something with little eternal value. It says it'll bring you grief because you're coming into this world naked and you're going out of this world naked. You can't take anything with you. Jesus himself said in Mark chapter 8, he says, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what will a man give in exchange for his soul? What are you investing in? What are you concerned about? What are you giving your money to? Are you rich towards God, or are you rich in the ways of this world? Number seven. Here's the last danger that comes from loving money, is that it leads to desperation. And as I went through these and as I was studying these this week, I thought this one has to be the most pitiful. This one has to be the most pathetic picture of a person who loves riches. Look at verse 17. Throughout his life, he also eats in darkness with great vexation, sickness, and anger. Here's the final portrait of the final days of a life of someone who loves riches. They're lonely. They eat in darkness. They're all by themselves. They're in misery. No one to join them. There's no joy in their life. There's no one with them. They have no friends. You're just there by yourself, eating in darkness all alone. What a horrible existence. And then your life is filled with vexation, sickness, anger. Vexation means fighting and conflict and strife, and sickness means you're going to get stressed out. You're going to have ulcers. You're going to have high blood pressure. You're going to have stomach problems. You're going to be an angry person, bitter, engaged in lawsuits, resentful. What a pathetic picture of where riches leads you. I was thinking this week of a story of Hetty Green. Remember Hetty? You don't remember her. Maybe you're hearing about her. She was that old miser, lived in late 1800s, early 1900s. She was known as the Witch of Wall Street. How'd you like that title? She was given $7 million by her father. She invested in Wall Street and the stock market. She's not a nice woman. She quarreled, fought, argued, was in conflict with almost everyone in her life. She was most known for her stinginess. She never used hot water. She never turned on the heat. She wore an old black dress all the time. She didn't wash her hands. She ate mostly pies that cost 15 cents. One tale claims that she spent half a night searching her carriage for a lost stamp worth 2 cents. Spent the whole night looking for 2 cents. Another claim says that she instructed her laundress, the woman who washed her clothes, to wash only the dirtiest parts of her dress, the bottom part, the hem, to save money on water and soap. Her frugality extended all the way to her family. Her son Ned broke his leg as a child, and she tried to have him admitted into a free clinic for the poor. And in the end, his leg had to be amputated because she didn't get proper care for her son because she was too cheap. She died in New York at 81 in 1916. She was worth about $200 million then, which is about $4 billion today. And she died alone with no friends and her life full of conflict. That's Ecclesiastes 5:17. It's a pretty pathetic portrait of the person who loves riches. It'll lead to corruption, dissatisfaction, takers, anxiety, harm, grief, and desperation. That's the bad news. And what I love about Ecclesiastes is Solomon flip-flops. And he says, yeah, that's bad, but let me give you the good side. All right, so let's end on a good note, because he does. He gives us the proper instructions here. The proper antidote to loving money is found in verse 18. Look what he says. Here's what I've seen to be good and fitting: to eat and to drink and to enjoy oneself in all one's labors in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. Oh, when God becomes a part of the picture, suddenly everything changes. Look, at least in these last few verses, the name God appears at least five times. Verse 18, verse 19, verse 20. God is now a picture. When you take God out of the picture and he's not a priority, you're going to have a hard life filled with all kinds of grief and sorrow. But when God is in the picture, when you're rich towards God, look what happens. Suddenly life is meaningful and it's joyful, and there's happiness in your life when God is the source of your joy and you use your money to further his kingdom and bring him glory. Verse 18, here's what I've seen to be good and fitting: eat, drink, enjoy yourself in all your labor in which you toil under the sun. Listen, God has given you a job. Go after it. Work. Love it. Be grateful for it. Thank God for the check that comes as a result of your work. Work isn't bad. You understand that? Work is good. Yesterday, as the boys were doing their chores around the house, I was kind of finishing up the last part of my message, and one of the boys was not doing too well in his chores, and I heard Julie say something like this. She said, "Son, God gave Adam work before the fall. It's good. It's a good thing. So do your work heartily as unto the Lord. Enjoy it. Thank God for your labor. Are you thankful for your job? You say, it's not the job I want. It's a job. Are you thankful for the work God's given you? Listen, wake up tomorrow morning, Monday morning, and say, don't say, good Lord, it's morning. Say, good morning, Lord. Thank you for my job. Thank you for my work. Thank you for the privilege of earning money. Verse 19. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God, for he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. Listen, God gives you your money as a gift, whatever it is. Look at verse 19, the key phrase in there. God has given riches. God has given wealth. God is the source of your money. Say, I work for it. Yeah, but God gives you the ability. God gives you the strength. God gives you the skills. And if it weren't for his grace and his provision, you would not have what you have. You understand that everything you have is a gift. Your house, your cars, your clothes, your bank account, your ability to work and labor and earn a paycheck. It's all from God. So how do you fight this temptation to love money? How do you fight this worldly desire that creeps in along us all every day? It presses us to get more money. Here it is. The antidote is right here in verses 19 and 20. He says, you enjoy life. You work. You thank God for your money. You thank God for his gifts to you. You enjoy the life that he has given you. And you remember who the source of all your good gifts are. So go out today and go to McDonald's and buy a McFlurry to the glory of God. And ask them to put extra peanut butter cups in it. And thank God for peanut butter cups. Go home this week and hug your family and enjoy them. Take them out for dinner. All within moderation. Thank God for the gifts he has given you. Listen, money is either a tool or a tyrant. It's either a tool or a tyrant. It's either a tool to further the kingdom of God, or it's a tyrant who is a bad master. I wonder for you, which one is it? Father, thank you for this morning. Thank you for Solomon. Thank you for his wisdom. God, we need to hear these things because we're surrounded by a world that loves its riches, loves its money, loves its wealth. And if we're not careful, Father, we can let our hearts go down that road. We can think we don't have a good enough job. We can think we don't earn enough money. We can begin to think we deserve more. And God, that grows in us a heart of bitterness, anger. Lord, let us remember that all the things that we enjoy are from you. Let us enjoy them. Let us be thankful for them. Let us give you praise and honor and glory and thanks for the money we earn this week. For the things we're able to buy with it. So we know that they're from you. Let us enjoy life under the sun to the praise and the glory of Christ. Because we know that he is the source of all these blessings. Everything that we enjoy is ultimately because of what Christ has accomplished on the cross. And we praise you for that. In his name we pray. Amen.
You've been listening to a sermon by Pastor Todd Dykstra, teaching pastor of Maranatha Bible Church in Comstock Park, Michigan, where we exist to display God's glory, declare God's truth, delight in God's Son, and disciple God's people. No part of this digital file may be reproduced or distributed without prior written consent. For permission, go to mbcmi.org.